And good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name is Jim Hutchings, and as per usual, joined by our co-host, Mona Hill.
Hi, everybody.
Good morning, Mona. We're 7 days away from the anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It was December 10th, 1948. I'll let you figure out what anniversary that was. And today we're talking to local activist and musician Regan Hinchcliffe, as well as Amnesty International field worker Gord Barnes. Good morning, Regan and Gord.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, yeah, what's up?
What's up with you?
December 10th, that's what we're here to talk about.
Okay, is that my cue?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, all right. We're going to take this in some interesting directions today. On December 7th, the reason we have Regan here is, for one purpose, is to talk about December 7th, which is 3 days before December 10th, obviously, because there is an event happening in Regina that Regan has planned, and he is a musician, Regan has been working on having sort of jam sessions in Regina, and I'm going to let you talk about your jam sessions that have been occurring, how long you've been working on them, where they are, and what your plans are, and how you've sort of come to a position of activism with your jam sessions and your music, Regan.
This summer I kind of started up another little group after I left the band I was in prior, and I had a gig set up at the Free House, and I just kind of wanted, you know, to have a little kind of chill gig for our first time, you know, kind of getting back into it for the first time again. And anyways, we had it on the deck at the Free House, and you know, I was kind of nervous about it, and you know, just like with the new group and you know, everybody involved, and kind of a new concept I wanted to bring up was that anybody could come up there and jam. And basically we brought shakers and didgeridoos and everything, and it's the first time we ever did it, and it ended up turning out really well, and people actually really came up and had a great time, and it went all throughout the night till maybe like 2 a.m. and there were also some really talented musicians that were there that didn't even know about it, and there was one girl from Vancouver came up and blew everyone away. She kept saying, and it really surprised me. So I mean, that kind of really striked my interest in maybe hosting these jam nights. You know, I know some people that do it already, but you know, I'm trying to kind of introduce like a new concept of jamming, and that's I don't know, it's the atmosphere that you can create if you're able to do it right, about, you know, everybody coming up and not feeling nervous about doing it. It's not kind of structured like that. And so anyways, I've been doing it every month since, and the manager's has been kind enough to let me do it, and it's just getting bigger and bigger every time. It just got sponsored by Stella Artois. So anytime an artist comes up and plays a song now, they get a free beer. And I just pulled in the food bank with it because, you know, I found that, you know, music, after this past year, I really learned that music isn't about, like, boosting your own individual ego. It's about bringing people together, making them feel good, and then bettering the community. And, you know, music can bring people together. And if you can bring people together and you have that power, I think that you should use it for doing better for the community. And, I mean, getting a food bank bin doesn't take any time at all. Just put it in the front and then promote it, that it's got the food bank there and people can bring food. And, I mean, they'll guarantee that, you know, somebody's going to be eating that night.
Wow. Okay, let me ask you a couple of questions about it. How often have you been holding these jam sessions?
I've done 4 jams now since
okay.
the summer.
And once a month, is
once
it?
Once a month. So okay. It's a Tuesday of every month. Usually it's the first Tuesday, but, you know, that can always change because, you know, it's not... It's just like the jam. It's not that structured.
It's not written in stone. Right, yeah. And Jim and I have participated in, I think, probably almost all the jams.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of lucked into showing up there one night.
No, you guys
Yeah.
Oh, you guys make me very excited. Every time I have that jam, I look forward to, even it doesn't matter if nobody else shows up, I look forward to you guys coming up there.
Oh, that's great.
You guys were at the first one.
I think we were.
You were at the first one. You guys have been coming to every single one of my jams, and I look forward to it every time.
It's been great fun.
And anybody can show up, and we just bring our percussion instruments, and we play when we feel like it, or we hand it over to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I think the last show we had last month, there were about 4 guitars on stage, there was, including a bass guitar.
Yeah.
There were a number of other percussion instruments, singers, people come, people go, and you know, sort of, we have so much fun. We are the elders of the jam, Jim and I. And I was so excited when you and I were talking one day about your idea of bringing in the food bank. And what was the response you got when you phoned the food bank?
I mean, it's pretty natural. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that like to do it, like to do stuff like that. But, you know, and I really enjoy the fact that I'm able to bring people together just for that reason. And I mean, the whole jam session, it can be part of that, you know, and maybe later down the road, I can, if maybe there's some more money involved, especially from the alcohol sales, I can start putting it towards another program, take a percentage of that and put it towards it. And
some other sort of activist program.
North Central Family Center, probably.
Okay.
I really, really enjoy just for a program they have that pays artists to go paint murals in the buildings.
Right.
And there and kind of bring kids together to make a community effort to kind of clean up the area.
Okay. That's awesome. So, the next jam is December 7th.
Yeah, December 7th at 8 p.m. starts
8
at 8
o'clock.
P.m. And depending how big it is, the manager told me that now that it's wintertime, it's going to be harder to keep it open as long. But I mean, if I could pack the place, I'm pretty sure they're not going to be able to.
Yeah, Tuesday night.
I'm pretty sure they're not going to be able to shut it down on me or too early. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if it's full, I don't know why they would.
No, exactly.
Yeah. So you're asking people to, when they come, is bring a bag of groceries?
Yeah, for sure. As much food as you can. I mean, just a bunch of non-perishable foods, right? So canned goods and stuff like that. And I mean, as much as you can.
Excellent. All right. So come out to the food at the Free House on Tuesday, December 7th. Bring a bag of groceries that will be donated to the food bank.
And it's at 8 o'clock.
At 8 o'clock, And I guess, the last thing I'd say about this, the importance of it is the timeliness of the season. Because right now, last night Jim and I attended a Tom Jackson event at the casino. And Tom does a yearly tour through the country raising money for the food bank. So I happened to have a conversation with Wayne Hellquist from the food bank.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is a great time for something like this. They need a lot of food. Mm-hmm. Christmas is coming, and there's a lot of people, a lot of families in our city who will be using the food bank and who would like to have some nice Christmas food. So
for sure. And like you're saying, timing is great because, I mean, this is the first time I've actually been able to bring the food bank in there.
Yeah.
And once again, it's the first time it's been sponsored by a beer company. And but the cool thing is I definitely can share the holiday spirit with everybody this season and bring some food for people that aren't as fortunate as ourselves.
Well, that's so exciting. And then we have the segue from December 7th to 3 days later. Is a big event that you're also involved in, and Gord Barnes is involved in as well. And this is our celebration with Amnesty International Regina, but this is celebrated all over the country, I think, on a global scale, and that is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and it's the anniversary coming up, and we try to do something very special every year. This year, we are focusing on our campaign titled Right for Rights. And there are thousands of other people across the country who write letters to save lives with Amnesty International. Well, one of the exciting things about our event in Regina is we're going to have a lot of entertainment. And Reagan himself is going to be entertaining. I have him listed as a rocker, activist, jam master, which you are.
That's pretty sweet.
How do you like that, eh?
Oh, no,
you can
I
market
like it.
Yourself
I do
now,
good.
You know. And some of the other people that are coming is Devin Floyd, who is an acoustic folkie, and Devin works for Carmichael Outreach, and we've had guests from Carmichael on in the past. The Local Onlys, The members are Thomas Rusin, who is on guitar, mandolin, Fender Rhodes, backup vox, Murky Waters, DJ Beatmaster, backup vox, and InfoRed is the MC, and they've just added a new drummer, Nathan Bowen.
Scott Newman's also.
Scott Newman? Yeah. Oh, I don't have his name on here. Thank you. Okay. And
he's also in my new band.
Oh, okay. Ink Road will be playing. Donnie Johnson, Lena... this is a Greek name, it looks like. Can you pronounce it?
Gardikitiosis. She's Greek.
Okay. Peter Broda, Eric Tessier, and Frank Lasby. And Eric Tessier will be backing you up on December 10th.
Yeah, he plays djembe in my new little project. So.
Yeah, that's the other thing about our jam sessions and about what's going to be happening on December 10th. There's going to be a lot of drumming happening there, I think. A lot of people are bringing their drums. So if you love drumming and dancing to drumming, show up. So those are the musicians that are coming. And I think there will be some other musicians that have asked to join us since I did the poster. And I said, just come on out and we'll have a big jam. And it's not just about music, though. Gorg, I'm going to give this to you now to talk about the purpose of celebrating this year and the Right for Rights campaign.
Well, thanks, Mona. And also, I should say to start with, thanks, Reagan, for your contribution for December 10th. This is huge that, you know, musicians in the community are coming together to support Amnesty International and the human rights work we're doing. Sure. I really, really appreciate that. And I'm really looking forward to next Friday night. It's going to be fun.
No, I appreciate it just as much as you, man.
So, you know, what we're doing is continuing, I think, with the theme that Peter Benenson initiated Amnesty International with back in 1961 when he said, you know, this is enough. This is just terrible, where he was quite upset. Actually, one of the things that caused him to initiate the organization of Amnesty International was he read an article where two students in Portugal were put in prison for having raised their glasses and toasted freedom. That act got them in trouble in Portugal in 1961, and he was appalled when he read that story, and he actually wrote an article in the London Observer that was republished around the world, and it was called The Forgotten Prisoner. So, you know, that's sort of the history of our organization, really, in terms of when we got started in Amnesty International. And over the years, the core of our work has really been sending appeals on behalf of people around the world who are, we call, either political prisoners, prisoners of conscience. People have been in prison maybe because of their religious beliefs. And also, more recently, we are involved in an expanded area of human rights work that we can maybe talk about a little later in the program. But so all these appeals, people are coming together, listening to the music on Friday night, but also encouraged to spend a little bit of time during the evening writing letters. As I say, people are going to be doing this right across Canada. Over 20,000 people have registered for our Right for Rights events across Canada and around the world. They're doing that. I want to just maybe share, I thought perhaps Jim particularly would be interested in one of the appeals. A person in Iraq who has been imprisoned since February of 2000. And I thought you'd be interested in this, Jim, because yeah, it's actually a person who is, we're calling for his release or at least charges in a fair trial in Iraq. He was actually a radio and television programmer. And for the first 3 years, his family wasn't even sure that he was alive. He was actually missing. As far as they were aware, he was tortured. They found out later that he was tortured. There have never been charges laid. His name is Walid Yunus Ahmed, and he worked at a radio station. He would have translated programs into Kurdish, Arabic, and Turkmen. And he was associated with one of the opposition parties that are connected with the Islamic movement in Kurdistan. And, as I say, has been in jail for now 10 years. So it's an example of the kind of appeals that we're working on. People will be in Regina writing letters on his behalf, but also throughout the world. And I just wanted to share that one as an example.
You know, it's interesting, journalists in some less developed or less, should I say, civilized countries, journalists have a short lifespan. You know, you go to Russia, for example, and I remember one particularly prominent female journalist, well known to everyone, ended up being assassinated. This happens all too frequently. It's happening in places, well, all over the world. And, you know, when you're saying things that other people don't want you to say, that they don't want heard, even in our country, things can, nothing quite as drastic as that, but you get into countries where rule of law is a little tenuous, it's a very dangerous occupation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought I'd share a couple, if we've got time at this point.
We have
point,
lots of time.
good. There's a couple other cases that we're going to be writing letters on. You know, we've recently, at our International Human Rights Film Festival, showed a film about Burma, or Myanmar, as it's called now. We had a guest speaker talk about the conditions in that country. One of the appeals that we're writing on next week, on December 10th, is about a person who is actually a very popular comedian, if you can imagine, actor and poet and film director. He was also an outspoken critic of the military government, the military regime in Myanmar. And after Cyclone Nargis hit the country in 2008, he publicly criticized the government's response to the humanitarian crisis, and that got him in trouble. He was arrested a month later, and you know, he's one of many people who are prisoners of conscience in that country. Amnesty International believes there are probably over 2,200 people who are either political or prisoners of conscience in Burma, and we're encouraging people to come out and write some letters on his behalf as well.
I have a question for you, Gord. At this point, I wanted to ask, for the benefit of the listeners, how does Amnesty know how many people are political prisoners in a country? How do they differentiate or decide on who is worthy, so to speak, of Amnesty's attention? What's the process?
Well, Amnesty International actually has an incredible research capacity. So we're always gathering information that's shared for all kinds of sources. You know, the examples I've used, the first one in terms of the person from Iraq, would have likely come in, you know, as well from family and friends. And it would all go to all the research and some of it would be even newspaper reporting, but all goes to what we call our international secretariat, which is the place where our researchers are, and that's in London, England. They look at it really, really carefully and try to always confirm things, you know, in terms of sources of information, and then decide whether it's appropriate to issue an appeal. One of the frustrating things in reality is that there are probably many more cases of human rights abuses that are happening that Amnesty actually hasn't been able to address simply because of, you know, a lack of information. But, you know, we think if we can identify with the work we're doing through the research work, the ones that, and confirm the information that we are identifying and it's issued annually in a report, and then we can have an impact. So I guess the short answer is Amnesty is cautious in terms of the research it's undertaking and the publications it makes, but the result of that is very confident of the research and reports it's issuing.
So in the terms of letter writing, if someone writes a letter, how do they know that the letter has made a difference? How do they know that this person maybe has been released from prison or maybe have had some opportunities to receive visitors or, you know, whatever the issues are? How do I know when I write a letter that it's made a difference?
Well, that, unfortunately, that's one of the frustrating things for all of us, because, you know, over the years, I've written many letters of appeal and have not got answers. Typically, the letters are addressed to a government official in a particular country, and it's quite frankly rare that we get an acknowledgement even of the letter having been received by that government official. However, what we emphasize is I'm not the only one writing the letter. There are, we know and are confident that thousands of people are. And then we need to then reflect in terms of whether this is even worthwhile, I think, which is, I think, your question. And, you know, when we look back over the appeals that people wrote letters on this time last year, a very significant number of those people have been released or their conditions have improved. And that's something I take heart in. The other thing I would use as an example in terms of our success, and you know, unfortunately, we're not successful in all cases, but our own Regina Amnesty International group over the years has written letters and been assigned particular people over the years that I've been involved, and this does date back a number of years now, but we wrote letters for years on behalf of a person in Russia who was a Baptist minister who had been in prison. He had a family of five children. He was in prison because of his religious beliefs, and he was eventually released. And, you know, our own group was assigned that particular case along with a couple of other amnesty groups around the world. And, you know, we raised our glasses of wine and toasted freedom when he was released. Another example was a young woman in Kosovo, ethnic Albanian, a student who was involved in a peaceful protest and arrested. And as I say, another example where we wrote letters and it went on for about 4 years. And finally, we found out she was released, which was very exciting. Most recently, I was just reading from a friend who's an amnesty activist in Edmonton. And, you know, they've been diligently writing letters on behalf of their prisoner of conscience, who's was a person in China who had been imprisoned for 10 years. And they just found out this week that he's been released. So that's huge news, you know.
Yeah.
After all that work, and you know, sometimes when those things happen, the individuals are actually able to be in a circumstance where they acknowledge Amnesty International and the letter writers and the human rights activists who have provided support. If you actually went to the Amnesty website at amnesty.ca, you'd be able to see all the information about Right for Rights, but you'd also be able to see, you know, some of the videos where individuals have publicly thanked Amnesty International members and supporters for their human rights work.
How much time do we have, Jim?
Oh, we have just about 3 minutes.
Okay, so I have one more question before we go to the break, and that is, and you kind of sort of answered it to a certain degree when you said that some of the people who have been released have publicly thanked Amnesty, and I was wondering if everybody who gets a letter written to them actually receives their letters. Are there countries or governments that would not allow the prisoners to receive those letters from Amnesty?
Oh, I think so, but even if they don't allow. Now, we should maybe just back up. As is mentioned, some of the letter-writing cases we'll be working on Friday, and, you know, other people are working on across the country, are where we're writing to a government official. In other cases, we are, as you've mentioned, writing directly to the prisoner. And in those cases, it's simply a message of support, you know, letting them know that we know where they are, and in many cases, you know, those circumstances have really been terrible in terms of their conditions. And we've been able to document that strategy is a very useful one in enough cases that we're going to continue on with it. And we'll be including many cases like that in our appeals for Friday night at the Right for Rights. unfortunately, you know, there are some pretty repressive regimes around the world where those letters may not get through to the individuals, but somebody else might intercept them. And it, if there's a good volume of them, which I'm pretty confident they're going to be, it might improve their circumstances.
So it's not always, we're not always able to help free them, but oftentimes even just improving their circumstances while they're in prison is as important.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. All right, I think we're going to go to the break now.
Well, we've got another minute.
Oh, we do. Well, you fill that time, Jim.
I want to...
Because well, I have more questions that are going to take more than a minute.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just going to add to Gord's comment there. I remember reading an interview with a fellow who had been released after months and months of being incarcerated, and he was telling the writer of the piece that his guards were basically mystified by the mountain of mail that he was getting, you know, bags of mail. And, you know, when people are aware that all sorts of people around the world know that he's there in that jail, it kind of puts the onus on those guards who are directly responsible for his treatment, you know, to treat him more reasonably because they know that their actions are going to be found out. So anyway, with that...
Let's take a break.
With that, we'll take a break.
Her body's been dry, but her heart's been limbo.
rumor has it that you were playing lead guitar on that, Reagan.
Yeah, I was. It was a band I started, Zinc Road. I started that band last summer in 2009. And, you know, we really pushed it to get some CDs out and really, you know, play a bunch of shows and have a good time. And, you know, good things coming to the end for me anyways. I had to leave it, so.
Well, that's great. So that was Ink Road. And if you weren't here at the top of the hour, we are talking about Amnesty International today in particular and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and sort of a segue from December 7th, which is next Tuesday, right? Is that next Tuesday? Yeah, next Tuesday at the Free House.
Yeah.
There's going to be a big jam, and we're asking people to come out, bring their instruments, bring their voices, just come and listen if that's what you choose, and bring a bag of food for the food bank because our guest Reagan Hinchcliffe has arranged for the food bank to bring a big barrel in and come in and help support people who are living in poverty in Regina with some things for their cupboards and some food.
Yeah, canned turkeys. Be good for the Christmas spirit, huh? And maybe some canned wine.
I actually believe I have seen wine in a can.
Oh, really?
And it kind of surprised me.
Well,
I don't
there
know
you
where
go.
It came from, but in the last little while.
Canned wine.
I thought that was interesting, yeah. But non-perishables, anything that you
can. Canned mistletoe.
Okay. Okay. And then on December 10th, we have Gord Barnes here from Amnesty, who's our field worker, the voice of Amnesty in Saskatchewan, I think. And he's been talking about December 10th, and which is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This is sort of the official signing on to that by, I don't know how many countries. Do you know how many countries signed on to that, Gord? This happened at the United Nations to start with, right?
It was adopted by the United Nations in 1948, actually.
Right, yeah. 61 years ago. So we're having
62.
Big event. Well, it depends on the birth date. We're having a big event at the Cathedral Neighborhood Center on the 10th. It's starting at 7 o'clock. And it's going to be called, it's called Rights for Rights. And that's an Amnesty International action that we take pretty well every year. Gord's been talking about the purpose of letter writing, the concept behind it, what it's been used for and the successes of it, some of the challenges of it. And I'm going to pass it right back to you, Gord, to continue on with this conversation. We talked about the differences that letter writing makes. We talked about whether or not prisoners of conscience or political prisoners ever receive their letters, and the fact that some letters go to prisoners that we write in support to let them know that we're aware of their circumstances, and the fact that a lot of the other letters will go to the actual government officials. So I'll let you take that away, Gord.
Well, thanks again, Mona and Jim, and also to Reagan for being here and for helping us with the event on December 10th. We're really looking forward to everybody showing up, having a good turnout at the Cathedral Neighborhood Center. It should be a real fun night with all the entertainment and also successful in terms of organizing a lot of letter-writing appeals. Before, in the first part of the program, we were talking about primarily appeals, letter-writing appeals that we write that were on behalf of individuals who were prisoners of conscience, and gave some examples of that. But the other part of Amnesty's work is a sort of broader area where we're trying to address human rights concerns in a more general way and also do something more preventative, if I can put it that way.
Proactive.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good term too, Mona. So, and I'll just use a few examples. One of them is about actually a priest in Mexico. And he works to safeguard the rights of vulnerable migrants in Mexico, where many people are subject to exploitation by criminal gangs and abuse. And because of his work, not only gangs, but also officials and some intolerant community members have actually threatened him, and his life is at risk. And you know, he has actually received death threats many, many times. So in this particular case, we've got a little kind of novel approach where we're actually writing a letter to the Minister of Interior. First of all, we'd introduce who we are and why we're concerned, and urging the minister to consult the particular priest that we're writing appeals on, and ask him what his team needs in terms of protection for their own safety, so that they can undertake their human rights work without fear of death threats, and that the death threats would end. Also, this is a little more novel approach. In this particular case, we're saying, you know, if people could bring socks or something like that, and include them with a card that they actually send to the priest in this case.
Socks?
Yeah, because it's something that people need who are migrants. So if we'll be encouraging people, write a letter to this father who is working and doing great work in Mexico. They get worn out. Socks get worn out quickly by migrants who are walking hundreds of kilometers, and they're in high demand. And you know, you can include that pair of socks with your message of solidarity that you send to the priest. So that's, as you know, your example of your term. This is a more proactive approach rather than waiting till something terrible happens to them, trying to express our concerns in an expression of solidarity.
Well, that's just fascinating. So we're asking people to bring socks if they want to write a letter to on behalf of this gentleman?
Right. And, you know, I guess if people arrive at the event and they're interested in that particular appeal, and they could always take it home and...
Right.
And find a pair of socks they'd like to include with the letter.
Right. Or you could leave a donation behind, and we could always go out and purchase some socks, too.
That's right.
That's
a good idea.
Yeah, we can do that, too. I have a question about writing a letter that somebody mentioned was concerned about. It was a concern in the past. If I write a letter to a government who has someone in prison or there's threats against a person, what's my personal cost to write this letter? Am I ever going to be in danger because of this letter that I'm writing as a Canadian citizen who's trying to support someone who's in jail somewhere else or who is in danger somewhere else? What is the personal cost for us to write letters?
Well, I think there's, fortunately for those of us who live in Canada, when we're writing appeals on behalf of people in other countries, I don't believe there's any risk at all. You know, we recognize as well that Canadians travel. I've never personally heard of any circumstance where a person who might be an Amnesty International letter writer, if I can put it that way, has then subsequently traveled to another country and got into difficulty because of their... I've never heard of any circumstance like that.
Okay.
You know, I've heard of, on the other hand, people who have been Amnesty International activists in some countries who have, by virtue of their human rights work, got into difficulty and been put in jail, and including some people who actually had a display at a concert in Russia this year.
Right.
You might recall that.
Yes, yes.
And the people who are Amnesty International activists were at this concert, had been invited by the musicians, and they had a table there, display, collecting petitions, handing out information, and unfortunately they ended up having their display closed down and were in jail. But, you know, I think those of us in Regina and in Canada enjoy a freedom that doesn't exist in many other places, and that's true of, fortunately, many countries in the world. We're able to, you know, speak up, raise our voices on behalf of people whose human rights are being denied.
As long as there aren't too many of us.
That's
think I'm just referring to the G20, where there were thousands of people who were protesting, and stuff happened.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So as long as we keep it low key, we're okay.
So if we've got a time, I've got a couple other examples that I wanted to mention that I thought the people listening to the Human Rights Radio today would be interested in. One is about the Lubicon Cree in Canada, actually, where in the northeast part of Alberta, there people are probably aware that there's a we've heard discussions even about this on the radio program previously. There's a large-scale oil sands development. It's on the traditional territory of the Lubicon people. There has been never been a land claim settlement with the Lubicon Cree. And Amnesty International, therefore, this December 10th, people will actually be sending appeals not only from Canada to the government in Alberta and Canada, but also people who are amnesty activists from around the world will be saying, you know, it is really time to address the treaty rights of the Lubicon Cree. And, you know, that is a campaign that Amnesty International Canada has been working on for quite a while. But now we've got the support and involvement of people around the world who are human rights activists. And we're hoping that because of the pressure that there will eventually be a recognition of the need to deal with the treaty right issue that has never been dealt with in terms of the Lubicon Cree.
Right. And if people wanted more information about what's happening there, you can go to our Amnesty website, amnesty.ca, and you can find a video, actually, that was produced about a year or two ago on what's happening on their land and the problems that they're faced with because of the development on their land. And this actually relates also to recently our government in Canada signed on to the Universal Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. So now we have sort of a double whammy here where we can use this perhaps to help our government understand the need to bring this to the forefront about their rights as well. There's a lot that can be done to work on this.
Mona?
Yes?
I've got another piece of music I'd like to play here.
Okay.
Could we do that now, or do you
want
to?
Sure, if you want to. Go ahead.
Okay, this is another Ink Road, and it's titled Woke Up. So let's see if my trusty netbook will fire up here.
We'll come back and talk more about letter writing after that.
Okay.
Let's talk some more about letter writing while you set that up, Jim.
Okay.
Hang on. Jim. So
carry on.
Gord, I've got another question for you.
Sure.
You talked about letter writing, and we're going to be doing a lot of that. And I mentioned the cost, personal cost, but I'd also like to state that the personal cost of letter writing is basically a stamp. We are going to provide all the information you need to write this letter. We will provide paper, and if you want to bring your own paper, you're welcome to do that. We'll provide envelopes. If you want to donate, that we can buy stamps to go to these different countries, that would be great. Admission is free, by the way, and all we're asking is if you feel like donating to the cause so that we can buy stamps, we can purchase envelopes or paper or bring your own, that would be great. Are there going to be any petitions? Because Amnesty is famous for having petitions.
That's right. November 25th to December 10th is actually referred to as not only by Amnesty International, but many other organizations around the world, 16 days for the elimination of violence against women.
That's and the 16 days of activism, right,
yeah,
against gender violence.
That's
yeah.
right. So we have been at other events even this week circulating petitions for a number of cases that we'll continue to collect petitions on December 10th and signatures on those petitions, I should say. So that's another strategy that Amnesty International uses.
Okay, I think I'm ready here now.
Thanks.
Time will tell. Okay, here we go. Yes. Ooh, nicely done. Yeah.
Okay, that was awesome. That
I
was
need your love, Mona.
So that was Reagan Hinchcliffe's old band, and they're still around, and their name is Ink Road, and they will be entertaining with a plethora of other bands on December 10th at the Cathedral Village Neighborhood Center.
Yeah.
And Gord Barnes is with us from Amnesty International. Reagan Hinchcliffe is with us, who's an activist and musician, and December 7th, he's going to be at the Free House, and there's going to be a food bank barrel there, bring food for the food bank. And we're going to get back to Gord to continue to talk about what we're doing on December 10th for the Universal Declaration of Human Rights Celebration.
Well, one of the other Right for Rights appeals I wanted to mention is actually an indigenous community in Colombia who have been receiving messages that are quite chilling. There's a paramilitary group called the Black Eagles who have signed the messages, and they're essentially saying they should leave or die. And those kinds of threats need to be taken very seriously in Colombia. In 2008, paramilitary groups declared the indigenous peoples in that area to be military targets. And as a result, indigenous leaders and communities have often suffered and sustained killings, attacks, and death threats. And dozens of people in that area have, this particular area of Colombia, have been killed. So we're saying this is unacceptable. It's got to end. That particular community is just one of 32 indigenous nations in Colombia that are at serious risk of disappearing forever as a result of the armed conflict there. And we're saying there's a serious failure of the Colombian government to uphold their rights. You know, back in June 2010 of this year, the Canadian government actually passed legislation to enact a Canada and Colombia Free Trade Agreement. They did so without any analysis of the human rights significance of that free trade agreement. Amnesty was calling for that. But we're continuing to work away on this and serious human rights concern. And one of the appeals, as I say, will be the calling on the president of Colombia to provide protection for the indigenous peoples. We'll be expressing concerns about the death threats been issued by the Black Eagles paramilitary group against the indigenous leaders in that area. And we'll also encourage people to send a copy of our message to Lawrence Cannon, our Minister of Foreign Affairs, because I think, you know, Canada needs to recognize its own role, in particular when we've got an agreement around trade relations, that Canada needs to recognize our own role in terms of saying to other countries that we are working with and have agreements with that human rights are a priority as well.
Okay. How much time we got, Jim?
Oh, we've got about 2 minutes roughly.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up the show. Thank you so much for being with us. Before we leave, Gord, is there any last words of wisdom that you have for our listeners regarding Friday, December 10th, the official birthday of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and our celebration in Regina?
Well, the word of, first of all, I should say once again, thanks to Reagan Hinchcliffe and the other musicians who are going to be supporting us and our human rights work on December 10th in Regina. There will be similar events across the country. I know it's kind of discouraging at times if we work on isolation, but knowing that there are literally over, at this point, 20,000 people registered to participate in our Right for Rights this year, I expect by the end of the week there will be lots more, that there's a powerful voice there that can make a difference. And by participating, showing solidarity, you're really contributing to improving people's lives around the world.
That's wonderful. So I'm going to just repeat what we're doing here. Celebrate with Amnesty International Regina on December 10th at 7 p.m., Cathedral Neighborhood Center, 2913 13th Avenue. There we will be celebrating. We will be writing letters, and we'll have some fabulous musicians and activists. Ink Road, Devin Floyd, Reagan Hinchcliffe, the local onlys. It's an all-ages event. Donations are gladly accepted because admission is free. And we're going to have cake. Okay. Thanks for being with
us,
Reagan.
Yeah,
you come
out
for the cake. Right. It's been great having you.
Yeah,
and hopefully we'll see many of you out.
Yeah, I really appreciate you asking me to come out.
Okay. Take care.
Every day and every moment in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. No one individual can respond to all the problems in the world, of course, to paraphrase a great humanitarian. If you can't help everybody, just help one. And whether the abuses stop immediately or take a long time to end, the gift of your attention and intervention can make a profound and positive impact on the ability of individuals and communities to endure and prevail. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."